not our usual introductory music for Open Air. That's harpist Kristen Lloyd, who is in studio today. She'll be performing with James Jaffe, cellist, and James Schultz, bass. They're part of One Found Sound Orchestra. They're giving a performance on December 8th at the Heron Arts in San Francisco's SoMa District on Heron Street. It includes music from Rameau, Brahms, and Ginastera, which we'll hear live in studio. Also, I'll be talking with Mitchell Covington, conductor and founding director of Voci Women's Vocal Ensemble, about Rejoice, Rejoice, the group's upcoming holiday concerts, with music from Renaissance and Baroque composers like Bach, Hasse, Charpentier, Vivaldi, and others. From Safe House Arts, we'll meet founder and executive director Joe Landini, celebrating 25 years of dance making in San Francisco's with 5 on 25, a celebration for Joe that'll be over these next 2 weekends. Plus, Open Air's regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, shines his light on the British biographical war drama Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill, and he discusses recent and upcoming performances at SF Jazz. Safe House Arts, an artist cooperative working to incubate new dance and theater artists through residencies, workshops, and performance opportunities, presents a program in honor of Safe House Arts founder and executive director Joe Landini, celebrating his 25 years of dance making here in San Francisco. Over the next 2 weekends, the program, titled 5 on 25, a celebration for Joe Landini's 25th anniversary, it'll feature new works by Alma Esperanza Cunningham, Nina Haft, Ranja Ver, as well as by Joe. It also includes an encore presentation of the SoMa Now and Then, a collaboration between Amy Lewis and Joe, which premiered last fall, as a walking tour of San Francisco's historic Leather District. Joe was recently awarded the Goldie Award by the San Francisco Bay Guardian in 2002. This 2012, the same year that he won the Dance Leader Award from Bay Area Dance Watch. And he was recently nominated for Best Director by Dance Europe magazine. And it's a pleasure to welcome Joe back to the studios.
Thank you so much. Glad to be back.
Congratulations. My gosh, 25 years of making happy feet in San Francisco.
I'm exhausted.
Did you ever? Have you ever stopped? I guess not.
No, never.
Well, having done this for 25 years and having this special celebration, I imagine part of the problem was winnowing down who do you include in this special celebration?
No, it wasn't that hard. I kind of reflected on who I wanted to collaborate with, and I really wanted to work with some artists that had been around for a long time, and that pool of people has been shrinking and shrinking the last few years. So when it came down to selecting collaborators, it wasn't that difficult, really.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk through the 2 weekends.
Yeah. So this weekend we have 2 premieres. Alma Cunningham's piece, His Story, Not History, is premiering tonight, as well as new work by myself, 25 Journeys Around the Sun. And both pieces sort of draw on my history in the city. Mm-hmm. Alma was really fascinated by this image of Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill over and over and over again. And then my piece is in a grid of 25 chairs where the audience sits in 25 chairs, and the dancers, there's 9 dancers, and they have to navigate the 25 chairs throughout the whole piece. So I set a piece, and then I put 25 chairs in the middle of it. And the dancers have to constantly move through the 25 chairs like a mouse looking for a piece of cheese, which is what my career frequently feels like.
Well, you found it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good for you. I understand the music of David Lang is involved as well in one of the pieces.
Yeah, we used David Lang's music, Just, which is from a soundtrack. And then I also researched a composer by the name of Francesco Landini, who I'm assuming is one of my ancestors, maybe, maybe not.
No.
loved his music. And then a third composer we found on YouTube, Pumpkin Orchestration, which was a score that was made from pumpkins.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it had a very wonderful percussive score.
Neat.
So
right.
We found some really eclectic music this year.
Tell us about the David Lang selection we're going to hear.
You know, it's a beautiful piece. He wrote it for a soundtrack called Youth. He's a sort of a neoclassical composer. And it's a very haunting, beautiful piece of music. It took me a long time to find the right kind of project for it, because it's a very distinct composition. Doesn't really fit for everything, but I think we found a good fit for this piece.
Let's hear a little bit of the music of David Lang, then more with Joe Landini. Excerpt from Just by David Lang, music that will be choreographed by Joe Landini as part of this weekend's celebration of 2 weekends of celebrating Joe Landini and 25 years, 5 on 5 at Safe House. Joe, let's talk a little bit about Safe House and how you got it started.
Yeah, I mean, I graduated from college 25 years ago, and I think what I saw was a lot of my peers were struggling with finding space and affording space, and so we started this idea of a timeshare. We found a space and turned it into a timeshare, and everyone has access to it for 12 weeks. We have about 80 groups to share the space.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
Everyone gets access for 12 weeks, and at the end of the 12 weeks, they have to do a public presentation to subsidize the space. So we use the box office receipts to subsidize the space.
Perfect. And you're in a relatively new space for you on Eddy Street. How do you find that space?
Yeah, you know, we had been pretty nomadic. We had been at three other locations, and I had been eyeing this particular venue for over 20 years, probably, waiting for it to open up. And I'd gone to the city and had a pretty good relationship with the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, because we've been partnering with them. And so I asked if that space was going to become available, and as it turned out, it was going to. And the city had some funding in line to help nonprofits not get pushed out of the city. So we were able to coordinate all the different threads and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And will you be dancing to your own choreography or not this time around?
I'm dancing in the other four pieces.
Oh, you are?
I'm
okay.
Dancing in mine. Right. I'm dancing in, let's see, Alma's piece is a trio. And then Ronja Ver has made a duet for myself and she. And then Nina Heft created a solo for me. And then, of course, we have Amy Lewis's solo also.
And that'll be featured next weekend, 14th to 16th, Thursday
Correct.
Through Saturday, 8 p.m. Safe House Arts is at 145 Eddy Street in San Francisco, talking with Joe Landini. So tell us a little bit more about those works that will happen on that second weekend.
Yeah, I think most of the artists were sort of pulled from my history. We had a great experience last year working with Amy, where she had sort of interviewed me about my adventures in the South of Market through the 80s, and we did the walking tour, as well as a theater version of this piece. where she interviewed me and used the interviews to generate the choreography, sort of as a collaboration. And after that, I was like, oh, this is kind of exciting. I think it'd be fun to sort of invite other friends to come in and use me as a laboratory. Mm-hmm. And so both Alma and Nina interviewed me and made pieces based on some facet of my life. And then Ronya was the only one who didn't necessarily do something biographical, but was very collaborative. And she had her theme. She really wanted, she's Finnish, and she really wanted to explore this idea of failure in American culture and our denial of failure. Hmm. And so I think she's unearthed some really fascinating observations in that piece, in that duet.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And what else should we be looking forward to in that second weekend?
Nina Half Solo is amazing. Another collaborative piece. She was really fascinated by this idea of me splintering off like from a pack of wolves or like a, and being like a lone wolf and starting my own pack. And so she built this whole piece around wolf-like traits. She started like looking at some of the Walt Disney Big Bad Wolf, The Wolf and the Three Pigs, all that sort of mythology. And she created a series of vignettes based on some of that imagery. And it's been pretty fascinating process working with her.
Two weekends of celebrating Joe Landini's 25 years of dance creation happens this weekend and next weekend. Once again, works by Alma Esperanza Cunningham, Nina Haft, Joe himself, Amy Lewis, and was it Ronya?
Ronya, yes.
Ronya Vare. Yeah. Fantastic. The concerts or the presentations are at Safe House Arts on Eddy Street here in San Francisco, and the presentations are Thursday through Saturday this weekend and next at 8 p.m. For more information, visit safehousearts.org. Joe, thanks for coming in, and this,
absolutely.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
We'll have you on for the 50th. How's that?
I think I'm going to be dead by then, I hope.
That's the sound of the Voci Women's Ensemble. Voci presents Rejoice, Rejoice, remaining concerts this Saturday afternoon at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Oakland at 2 o'clock, and then Sunday at 7:30 at St. Mary Magdalene Church in Berkeley. The concerts will feature a rare presentation of Nicola Porpora's inspiring work, Laetatus Sum, what we just heard a small excerpt from, a work Porpora wrote this text for the women's of Venice's Ospedale della Pietà, and maybe the first performances ever here in the United States. We'll be talking about that and the other works with Mitchell Covington, the director of the group. He's an accomplished choral and orchestral conductor as well as a composer. He's led many ensembles over a 30-year history, directing choirs and orchestras here in the United States and throughout Europe. Mitchell led Voci as its founding director from 1991 to 95, then directed the Bay Choral Guild from 95 to 2001, and led the choirs at First Presbyterian Church in Berkeley for some 23 years. His compositions include works for orchestra, chorus, stage, film, television, and video games. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to our studios. Hey, Mitchell.
It's great to be here.
Well, it's a great concert you guys are going to be presenting, and just in time for the holiday season. But let's talk about what was it about 18th century Venice that was so conducive for creating music for women's voices?
Yes. Well, you know, I think that a lot of people know that women in the church in general were not very accepted, and certainly women singing in church in Europe in the 11th through 18th, 19th centuries was a rare, if ever. But there was this wonderful thing that happened in Venice. There were the four orphanages run by the Catholic Church, which also served as music academies for young women. And they trained them vigorously in the art of music, and they became so accomplished that people traveled from all over Europe to hear the choirs at the Ospedali. And that's where this music, most of this music in this program comes from.
Hmm. And including on the program is music by a nun, isn't that right?
That's correct. There's a music by an abbess named Hildegard, who was a remarkable woman living in the 12th century, who was not only a composer and an abbess, but a mystic and a philosopher. And she wrote a whole body of chant. If we think of Gregorian chant, that's kind of the texture that she wrote in. And she was, her music is just amazingly, mystically gorgeous.
Do we have an excerpt of Hildegard von Bingen with us?
I think you have O Freundin's Virga.
Let's hear a little bit of that and then more with Mitchell Covington. Excerpt of the music of Hildegard von Bingen. That's the Voci Women's Ensemble from the live performance last week, as we could hear, with a little bit of a peripheral added attraction.
Yes, we had a completely full house, about 400 people, which is lovely to have, but it doesn't help with making recordings.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this Porpora piece that it may be the first performances ever here in the States.
Yes. Sure. Porpora actually wrote two settings of this text, and one of them is published in the United States and often performed, but the one that we discovered over the summer is not published here, to our knowledge, or in Europe, the score, but no performance materials. So we had to create performance materials. And as far as we haven't been able to find any performances of this piece in the United States.
Oh, that's something. I believe that it's featuring a certain young soprano soloist that's a recent graduate of a master's in vocal performance from Louisiana State University, currently studying with Sherry Greenewald, the director of the San Francisco Opera Center and the director of the Marillo program. Who is that young soprano?
Yes, just by coincidence, this is my daughter, Mackenzie.
Ah.
And she is an amazing soprano, and
you hear that, Mackenzie? And Dad's talking about you.
And her voice is particularly suited for this music. It's just a really, really wonderful match. So it seemed like a natural thing to do. And she just knocks it out of the park.
Mm. And tell us a little bit more about the other women of Voci.
Well, we have 30 members currently. They come from really mostly Berkeley, Oakland, some on the other side of the tunnel, Walnut Creek area. And they are all people who have other lives as parents or professional women. And yet they find the time and the energy to be very dedicated to what we're doing musically. And I think the thing that that I am really coming to love about these women is the emotional range that they bring to their music, all the way from the most sublime and seemingly effortless sound of a chant or a motet to really fun, bouncy stuff, and to very powerful and passionate and fiery sound. And sometimes they sound like there's not 30 of them, but 60 of them.
And yeah. So the numbered group now is about 30 voices.
Right, which is as large as we've ever been.
Oh, fantastic. Is there a regular process for obtaining new members, audition process? Or?
We do a couple times a year announce that we're auditioning new members, and You know, there's a small amount of turnover, and we'll have two or three slots to replace.
Also on the program, some music of Vittoria.
Correct, yes.
I had a note as well. Vivaldi's on the program as well.
Yeah, we have Vivaldi. He was one of the Ospedali composers. We have some Bach, who is in there as a predecessor of these people that wrote in Venice. Yeah.
You mentioned Hildegard, but there was also a woman by the name of Chiara Margherita Cozzolani.
Cozzolani was a woman composing for the Ospedali. And one of the cool things about the Venetian Ospedali is that in addition to empowering women by giving them an education and giving them choices in their life because of that education, they were also led by women. And Cozzolani was one of these women who led one of these music academies.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Porpora for a moment. We do want to make sure we get in part of this Fecit Potentiam.
Yeah, this is going to give us a taste of sort of the power of Voci. Yeah.
And more with Mitchell. Stand by for more music as well. Excerpt once again from Nicola Porpora's Laetatus Sum, a work Porpora wrote for the women's of Venice's Ospedale della Pietà, and possibly the first performances of this work in the United States, Voci Women's Ensemble, under the direction of Mitchell Covington. This Saturday at 2 o'clock, St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Oakland, and Sunday the 10th at 7:30, St. Mary Magdalene Church in Berkeley. Information at vocisings.com. That's VOCISINGS.com. Mitchell, what's in store for Voci in the year to come?
Well, in the spring, we're right now developing a concert that we're calling Alchemy. Alchemy. That's going to be music about fire, earth, air, and water.
Well, we'll have to have you back on to talk about that one.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for coming in, Mitchell.
And
more
you.
Music of Voci to sing you out.
Thank you very
Ellen.
Much.
What is Wir Ellen all about?
Wir Ellen mit Schwachen is about our feet are running quickly to serve the Lord.
Voci Women's Ensemble to be performing that work along with others this coming weekend at St. Paul's in Oakland on Saturday, Sunday at St. Mary Magdalene in Berkeley. Good afternoon. Once again, I'm David LaTulipe, Open Air, our weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. Peter Robinson will be on shortly to share his take on some recent films and cultural events. And next, well, it's a new orchestra here in town. It's called One Found Ensemble, One Found Sound. It's a conductorless, collaborative chamber orchestra on a mission to break down the barriers of the classical music stigma, to bring it back to its glory days of boisterous audiences and the thrill of discovering something new with each note. Have a live performance with harpist Kristen Lloyd and James, where's James? James Schultz will be performing on bass, and cellist James Jaffe will be performing cello on an excerpt from Ginastera as part of the ensemble that we'll have here in studio. And joining me to talk about the ensemble itself is Emily Bortel and Julia Sara Bonomo. Julia plays clarinet in the ensemble, and Emily is not playing playing today, but she, I imagine, she's playing as part of the concerts itself. Emily, Julia, welcome to Open Air.
Thanks for having us.
Sarah, I'm sorry. We go by Sarah?
Is that I correct? Go by Sarah,
okay,
yeah.
Sarah. Full biography here.
No Emily. Problem.
So tell me, you guys are all graduates of the San Francisco Conservatory. What gave you the idea to start yet another ensemble?
Well, I think the conservatory really played a large role in the beginning of this ensemble. We were all sort of classmates, and we had a really kind of special community while we were there together. And when we graduated, we just sort of thought to ourselves, you know, how can we keep that community going and how can we share that with other people? And as a clarinet player, there's not a whole lot of chamber music, so small ensemble music available to us. It's a lot of orchestral stuff, so I thought, why not try to start an orchestra?
Mm-hmm. And who did you study clarinet with at the conservatory?
I studied with Luis Baez. Mm-hmm. He plays E-flat and clarinet in the San Francisco Symphony.
Emily Bortel is a violinist with the group, is also here to talk about the ensemble. How long has this been going on, Emily?
Sarah and I graduated from the conservatory with our master's in 2012, and we started One Found Sound in 2013. The conservatory really fostered the importance of chamber music for us and a love for playing chamber music with our friends. And so in 2013, One Found Sound started with us contacting a bunch of our favorite friends and musicians and saying, hey, let's all meet up and read Beethoven 6. And yeah, it was a pretty magical experience. And 5 years later, we're in our fifth season, and we're really excited about where our future's heading.
And this concert will be at Heron Arts, 7 Heron Street in San Francisco. That's also where the February concert will be, and the concert that you've got planned for April as well. This December concert features music of Jean-Philippe Rameau, the overture from Nais, as well as Brahms' Serenade No. 2, which we'll hear before the hour is up, and also Alberto Ginastera's Variaciones Concertantes. I'm not sure which language I'm mangling there. But
that sounds great.
Let's talk about the Ginastera. We're actually going to have a live performance of part of it.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
The Ginastera is, Ginastera's Argentinian composer, and he was in Argentina during the rise of sort of the nationalist movement, and as an artist, that kind of pushed him out, and he ended up in Geneva in the mid-1900s, and he wrote this piece as a commission in 1953, and actually have a little quote. He wrote in the beginning of the score that it was a subjective Argentine character. So I think there was sort of a lot of tension between him and how he felt about his homeland and his identity surrounding that. And that is sort of how he plays with, it's folk music, but it's not specifically Argentinian folk music, except that it's written by a guy who's from Argentina.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful piece, and it features every single instrument in the orchestra as a soloist, and it ends with the orchestra itself as the soloist, if you will.
Neat. Well, we're going to hear a bit of the beginning. Cellist James Jaffe actually has the opening theme to the work, and it's going to be performed with Kristen Lloyd playing harp. We heard Kristen earlier. Kristen's been studying the harp for some 18 years. She received her Bachelor of Music degree from the Shepherd School of Music at Rice University, where she studied with Paula Page, the principal harpist of the Houston Symphony. And after finishing her grad degree, she came out to California to take part in the Orchestra Institute and Napa Valley Fellowship Program. And she's been in San Francisco acting as a freelance harpist. James Jaffe is a cellist who has been performing all around the area, including the Stockton Symphony, Trinity Alps Chamber Music Festival in Switzerland and France. And he joins us now in studio to perform the Alberto Ginastera opening variation, opening theme, with harpist Kristen Floyd, live in studio here on KLW. Beautiful playing indeed here in the KLW studios. James Jaffe on cello and Kristen Lloyd playing harp. Talking about One Found Sounds concert that's coming up on the 8th of December at Heron Arts on 7 Heron Street here in San Francisco. Ginastera's variations, concert variations, are being featured, that opening movement. Sarah, there are variations for other instruments as things progress.
Yes, there is a variation for every instrument in the orchestra. So, and there's also two little interludes featuring the different sections of the orchestra. So that is the theme that opens the piece, and then it's followed by a string interlude, and then it goes directly into the beginning of the variation. So the first variation is the flute, and I think we have a little bit of that.
Let's hear a little bit of that, and then we'll have more in-studio performance as well. Thank you. That was flutist Katrina Walter performing that variation. And then there's a final soloist variation that happens with the bass player, who we have also here in studio. James Schultz is a freelance bass player and teacher. James has performed with a variety of Bay Area orchestras, including the Stockton, Berkeley, and Napa Valley Symphonies here in San Francisco, and the One Found Sound Group, and with the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. James, welcome to you. Let's hear that final variation, or the final solo variation of Hina Stera's work with harpist Kristen Lloyd. Harpist Kristen Lloyd with bassist James Schultz. Wonderful playing, and that's part of One Found Sound. That was live here in our KLW studios, by the way. One Found Sound's concert on the 8th of December is at 7 Heron Street, Heron Arts, featuring a music of Rameau, Hina Stera, which we just heard a taste of, as well as the music of Johannes Brahms and his Serenade No. 2. Well, we look forward to hearing about the February concert down the road, Sarah, and we hope that you both, Sarah, Emily, maybe bring in more of the ensemble next time. We'll have another live performance.
Yeah, we'll have to get the full orchestra in the studio here.
We could probably do that. We can make some arrangements, I'm sure. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Here's a little bit of that Brahms Serenade No. 2 that will be featured as part of One Sound's concert on the 8th.
Thank you.
taste of the Brahms Serenade No. 2 in A Major to be performed for One Found Sounds concert on the 8th. OneFoundSound.org for more information. And thanks to Brendan Guy for making all this possible. And, you know, we had a little bit of spontaneous moment of inspiration here on Open Air with having such a fine cellist here. James Schultz has agreed to play a little bit of Bach for us. How can you not have something from the Bach solo suites? Here's James performing the prelude from Bach's third suite in C major. Thanks for staying, James. Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by cellist James Jaffe here live in the KLW studios. One Found Sounds, music of Brahms, Hinastera, and Rameau will be performed on the 8th. OneFoundSound.org for more information.
the washing on the secret line. Have you any dirty washing, Mother dear? We're going to hang out the washing on the secret line, 'cause the washing day is here. The weather may be wet or fine, we'll just rub along without a care. We're going to hang out the washing on the secret line, if that secret line's still there. Mother dear, I'm writing.
That's an unusual piece to hear on open air. What's our connection there, Peter Robinson?
Well, it's very hard to go from a beautiful cello by Bach to the magic of the Siegfried Line. But indeed, the Siegfried Line is a piece of music you would have heard on the BBC, the British Broadcasting Service, in May 1940, had you been following the movement of British troops in northern France as they were rapidly retreating to what ultimately be the town of Dunkirk. Now, I introduce that because the movie I'm reviewing this week is called The Darkest Hour, and it is a brilliant piece of acting by Gary Oldman playing Winston Churchill. And his darkest hour are those last 2 weeks in May, just before he becomes Prime Minister. And his enemies are not just the Nazis, but they're also within the cabinet at the time with Halifax and Chamberlain, who essentially were still in the appeasement mode and wanted to try to cut a deal with Hitler through the Italian ambassador, something which Mussolini had set up. So as we pull back from the Siegfried Line, we now move to domestic politics in England. And I think this year has been very much what I call the British invasion. Not the Beatles, but earlier on we had Dunkirk, which of course is the same time frame and the point in history that this particular movie called The Darkest Hour about Winston Churchill finishes on. It is a powerful piece of characterization by Gary Oldman, and I think part of the tribute has got to go to the makeup artist. He does a remarkable job both facially, hair-wise, and I should add that Gary Oldman is a very trim, fit person, tall. So they've built the body in the sense that you see some of the stomach line of Winston Churchill, who was short and, let's say, stubby for sake of a better adjective. So the movie is a power struggle. It's a political thriller as much as it is a war movie. And the King, George VI, is played by Ben Mendelsohn, and it is a remarkable piece of character acting too, because at first the King is not sympathetic to the Churchillian let's fight to the last man. And the reason I say it's interesting characterization is that in the course of the movie the King changes his mind and moves from the appeaser's point of view to the Churchillian point of view. Again, it's a partial love story because the wife of Churchill, Clementine, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, is very much a levelling type of woman who both is affectionate but able to speak up to Churchill. So I think this is a domestic story. It's domestic in the sense that it's covering politics in England in May 1940, but it's also domestic in the sense that it is a balanced relationship between husband and wife at a time of crisis, and how she becomes a person that he can essentially lean on. And part of Gary Oldman's trick is to capture the many different sides of Churchill, from his manipulative good humour, his slyness, and there's even a section when he's depressed. Churchill would refer to this as the black dog, and you get this done, again, facially by Gary Oldman. So you feel you're in the cabinet rooms, the war rooms down there, as you approach Buckingham Palace, and if ever you're taking a trip to London, I would highly recommend a visit to the cabinet war rooms, because the setup is very much just like being there in 1940. The rooms are cordoned off, the maps are on the wall, the generals are around the table, the decisions are being made. So I was totally and utterly entrapped in this film. I felt I was back there at the time, And I also had that feeling that this is a film about leadership. And if there's one thing we need, both in this country and probably in the UK at the moment, it is a person who knows how to lead. Now, I'm going to leave those thoughts out there because those just happen to be my own independent opinions. But this stirs you up to see what good leadership can do. And in Churchill's case, one of the put-downs that is suggested by both Halifax and, again, some of the other cabinet members is, oh, he's just an actor. Actor he may have been, but he was also a speaker. And some of the best bit of, I call it house photography, is done in the House of Commons. And Churchill was always a House of Commons person. He refused to join the House of Lords. He got knighted. And again, if you're travelling down in Westminster Square, there facing the two houses is a remarkable statue of Winston Churchill. And he has his finger up, his mouth open, oratory is coming out. So my tip, and I'm going to go out on a limb on this one for a possible Oscar this year, goes to Gary Oldman, his tremendous performance. And I think, too, a whole sense of another era brought to life again on the screen. The movie is called The Darkest Hour, stars Gary Oldman, and Churchill's wife is played by Kristen Scott Thomas. One of my recommendations for this year.
Peter, I think, you know, if he doesn't get an Oscar, at least he got a Peter out of this, right?
Oh, he got a Peter out of it. That's right.
Well, good for him.
So we're going to hear a little bit of Pink Martini now, and I'll explain why we're going over to that. So just in 1 hour, we've gone from Brahms, from Bach, to we're going to hang out the washing on the Siegfried Line. And now, here we go. Hang on, Little Tomato.
Martini to ring in the holiday season. I could use one myself right about now, Peter.
There you go. Make sure you've got a cherry in it, or do they put an olive nowadays, or could it be an onion? Yeah, well, Pink Martini are playing it in December. I'll advise you straight away, I'm talking about SF Jazz here in the city. You're probably going to have to stand in line or wait a long time on the phone because they've been selling tickets very, very fast. But they have got three or four different performances. And one thing I like about Pink Martini is they're a multilingual group. So you can hear French, you can hear Italian, you can hear English, and they have an international reputation. They played in Paris, they played in Tokyo, and of course they will be here in San Francisco. And they have a kind of spirit which I think really speaks well to the ambience at SF Jazz. There's a kind of intimacy between the performance and the audience. And there are two rooms down at SF Jazz, which kind of makes a difference. The one I was at last week had Diane Reeves. And she's a great scat singer. She's one of that old tradition in the best line of cabaret, where she partly tells a personal story. She explains how she got into things, what the stories relate to the music. And again, she has her own independent following, which was clearly alive on that particular evening. And it's almost an arena-type stage. So you've got audiences in front, audience at the side, and then a small section where the audience is above. And to me, the acoustics worked really well. It's an ideal sort of cabaret setting. And this, again, I think, is why something as intimate as Pink Martini will really touch your soul and get you warmed up for whatever you want to be doing over the festive season. It'll bring a smile to your face, a happiness to your ears, and a joy to your pace. So if you can, try your best to get a ticket for Pink Martini.
Remaining concerts, Saturday is almost sold out. It's a 9:30 performance, and Sunday is also almost sold out. It's a 3 o'clock performance, sfjazz.org for more information. By the way, the great singer Kurt Elling is singing there tonight at SF Jazz. He's a wonderful singer.
Okay. Now, to give you a sense of the variety that you can get there, another performer who is both doing a live performance and also a type of workshop is a trio, Mark Ship.
Matthew Ship Trio, which Ship. Is Matthew Ship, Michael Bizio, yeah. and Whit Dickey.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew. Yes, I always got that wrong. And again, the times I've heard him, he seems to have a close connection to Duke Ellington. And it's that kind of slow, take you into the mood, let the piano speak for itself, bring in the bass, and then you're there. So it's a kind of speaking type of performance. And one piece that I thought we'd hear by him is Take the A-Train, which again is a great piece of Duke Ellington.
Thanks for those recommendations, Peter. Mm-hmm. The Matthew Ship Trio, Matthew Ship, Michael Bizio, and Whit Dickey. That's Open Air for this Thursday, December 7th, 2017. I'm David LaTulipe. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. Join us again next week, and some holiday music in store for you over these next couple of weeks.